The Children's War by Jock Phillips. For 4 long years, from 4th of August 1914 until 11th November 1918, New Zealand, as part of the British Empire, was at war. Tens of thousands of New Zealand men were fighting on the other side of the globe, on the steep slopes of Gallipoli, in the deserts of the Middle East, in the muddy trenches of France and Belgium. These places were a world away from the classrooms of peaceful New Zealand. So how did the war reach children here? And how did it involve them? People at home closely followed the war's progress, especially with so many loved ones away. They read articles in their local newspapers, many of which had been censored. They got letters and postcards from the soldiers themselves, which had also been checked by the authorities. And they scanned the lists of casualties that were published each day and discussed the telegrams that would arrive at any time. Because war was everywhere, it was impossible to keep children from hearing about it. Besides, most of them were directly affected. Countless fathers, brothers, uncles and cousins had been shipped overseas as soldiers, and children had gone to the wharves and railway stations to wave goodbye. These men were often gone for several years. 1 in 5 of them would never come back. In the beginning, people were excited about the war, especially many young men who saw it as a chance for a great adventure. The recruitment of soldiers began straight away, and although the New Zealand government had offered 8,000 men to Britain, within just 4 days, 14,000 had volunteered. Most thought they'd be home by Christmas, but they weren't. The war dragged on. For many New Zealanders, 1917 was a turning point. The war was at a stalemate, and the flood of men eager to fight had reduced to a trickle. The previous year, the government had been forced to introduce conscription. Then came the horror of Passchendaele, when more than 800 New Zealanders were killed in a single day. Morale plummeted for both soldiers and civilians, and people became despondent. The enormous death toll was more and more difficult to justify. The government wanted people to stay positive about the war, even children. It wanted people to see the war as a joint effort, and for those back home to believe that the sacrifices were worth it. Women kept busy fundraising and organising care parcels for soldiers. Children were expected to be good for their mothers and be useful. It was their duty to help win the war. They were even encouraged to see themselves as soldiers of the British Empire, just like their fathers at the front. Honouring the flag. Children were expected to show their support for the war each morning before they even got inside their classrooms. Most schools had a flagpole, and the school day would begin with students saluting the flag, something that became a government order in 1917. To increase the feelings of unity and pride, children were asked to sing a special song during the flag-raising ceremonies. Although some of these songs mentioned our native country's flag, meaning the New Zealand flag, the government preferred that children saluted the flag of empire, which was the Union Jack. This ritual was usually followed by a patriotic talk from the head teacher, who was sure to mention the British King, George V, the empire, and the boys overseas. War stories. Inside the classroom, students spent the day surrounded by maps of the Western Front and photos of Empire heroes. During lessons, they worked their way through the school journal. Between 1914 and 1918, the journal contained a lot of material about the war, with one catch. It avoided the unpleasant truth about the soldiers' experiences. Instead, the war was given a positive spin, with stories of heroism and success. Students were told about New Zealand's conquest of German Samoa without a shot being fired. When they learned about Gallipoli, they were told of the success of the landing, not of the ultimate defeat. The journal reassured readers that officers at Gallipoli had led their men splendidly. Children were also provided with heartwarming or benign stories about the war. They read about pigeons and dogs in war, our four-footed soldiers, about the use of dirigible balloons, the wireless, and motorcycles. In 1915, an article called Christmas and War was published in the journal. This told of the unofficial truce the previous year when German and British soldiers on the Western Front left their trenches on Christmas Eve to talk and sing together. Readers were informed that friend and foe mingled freely, each side more than a little surprised to find what good fellows, after all, the others were.